south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, I think I started a thing with all those motorcycle stories. The emails have been flooding in from gringos, expats, and tourists here in Latin America, laying their own crazy motorcycle stories on me, like this one. This time, Chester writes, "Hey, Johnny, I booked a trip to an all-inclusive resort about 3 months ago in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic. Once we arrived, my wife and I hooked up with an Uber at the airport, or I should say a registered taxi of some sort, because they don't allow Ubers to go directly to the airport. Some kind of organized taxi lobby against them, I guess. So, it was around a 20-minute drive to the hotel complex, but you wouldn't believe it. About halfway there, our so-called registered official taxi had a flat tire, and we ended up taking an Uber anyway. Our official taxi driver had a spare, all right, but it was flat. Once we hit the road, there were motorcycles everywhere. Outside of the airport, they were swarming like locusts, but not a single one at the airport. And I asked the Uber driver, what's up with that? He said they're not allowed to drop off or pick up people there. He said there are hundreds, maybe thousands of motorcyclists that act as clandestine taxis. They're called motoconchas. So if you're hailing a taxi, for example, anywhere in the Dominican Republic, chances are a motorcyclist will pull up and offer you a ride. Now, of course, gringos and tourists will never get on a bike like that, but the locals do it all the time because it's only about 50 cents to a buck a ride, though they'll never offer you a helmet. And those motoconchas will even pile your luggage on. How they do it, I don't know, but they do it. So anyway, Johnny, we're on this fairly busy highway on our way to the resort. We pull up to an intersection with streetlights and all that aren't working. The power's out. And I thought, oh no, the power will be out at our hotel too, but it wasn't. Obviously, they've taken care of that problem with generators on call 24/7. So we're at this corner where the power's out, so there's no streetlights flashing. And there's a transit cop in the middle of the road directing traffic. So we're sitting there a minute or so waiting for the cop to give us the go sign. The intersection was crawling with motorcyclists, certainly because there was a big bus depot there. About those motorcyclists, they were not minding the traffic cop at all. They were going every which way, any way they wanted. Only cars and truck drivers were obeying the cop's hand signals, but for the motorcyclists, it was as if he wasn't even there. So we're right at the front of the intersection with a car on either side, also stopped at that three-lane highway. Suddenly, a motorcycle whips out from the bus depot against traffic, against all signals from the cop. He does have a helmet on, but he's balancing a big box between his legs. Then he slipped or hit a pothole or something. He lost control and started sliding sideways. Before we knew what was happening, he smashed into the car to the right of me, a brand new black Toyota Yaris. And being that these days most cars are made out of plastic, when the guy crashed into the front of the car, he ripped the entire bumper off. It ended up in the intersection about 10 feet in front of the car. And after he glanced off that car, he rammed the right front end of the Uber my wife and I were in. By then, he and his bike were laid out flat on the road. The cop ran over. My Uber driver got out of the car to see the damage in his car. And next to us, a beautiful young Latina got out of that Yaris she was dressed to kill on her way to an appointment or something important. Then the motorcyclist got up, pulled his bike up to the upright position. He tried like hell to start it up, laying on the kickstarter over and over again, but it just wouldn't turn over. It was obvious he was trying to get the hell out of there, leave the scene. He even tried to push start it, but it wasn't happening, and by that time the cop was in his face. I was in the passenger seat of the Uber, and my window was down, so I got to see and hear what happened next up close and personal. And Johnny, even though my Spanish stinks, I got the gist of it. The cop asked the motorcyclist, the Latina, and my Uber driver for their licenses. But the motorcyclist didn't have one. He went through his wallet, patted all his pockets down, even went into the compartment of the busted-up motorcycle, and no license. According to my Uber driver, who told me what happened in that huddle later, he spoke some English. Unfortunately, my Spanish is about a 1.5. He said the motorcyclist told the cop he left his license at home. Yeah, right. Everyone knows that's a lie. That's the oldest trick in the book. On top of that, it wasn't difficult to conceive the motorcyclist, who was 100% at fault, would never pay anyone a cent. My Uber driver confirmed what you said, Johnny. Half of motorcyclists don't have valid licenses, and nearly 100% of them don't have insurance. Motorcycle insurance in Latin America, it seems, is only for people with Harleys, Ducatis, and BMWs. Insurance is for responsible people who can afford expensive bikes. So, Johnny, here's what happened next. Suddenly, the motorcyclist went into the I'm hurt, take me to the hospital routine. That's the easiest way to get out of a situation like that or get sympathy when you know you're 100% in the wrong. It's also a way to reverse the tables, to get the innocent people in the drama to pay out. Because in Dominican Republic and, I guess, throughout Latin America, according to the Uber driver, in an accident, if someone ends up in the hospital, obviously most often the motorcyclist, being that they're the most vulnerable and they're not enclosed in a little protective box with a seatbelt, surrounded by airbags like everyone is in a car. So the person or persons who go to the hospital, they get all the attention and sympathy. The courts always favor the person who's been hurt. According to my Uber driver, every motorcyclist knows that. That's a wild card even the dumbest of motorcyclists will play. That's if they're unable to hightail it out of there first. So the cop, having sympathy for the, quote, hurt motorcyclist, walked him over the curb, sat him down, made a quick call on his phone, and came over to my own Uber driver and the distressed Latina, whose brand new super clean car was no longer brand new or super clean, not with its gnarled bumper laying out in the middle of the street. What happened next, Johnny, was the craziest thing. The cop checked the Latina's papers and turns out she had a Venezuelan passport and driver's license. Apparently, my Uber driver told me later, there were lots of fake Venezuelan licenses going around Latin America. And there was really no way for cops or officials to look them up, no way to tell, no database anyone could penetrate in Venezuela. The Uber driver said there were more fake Venezuelan documents out there than real ones. Now, the Uber driver told me the cop was obviously prejudiced against Venezuelans. So he was giving her a really rough time. Just as an aside, Johnny, the Uber driver told me the DR and many of the adjoining countries were just flooded with Venezuelans. He said though the cops and bureaucrats might be prejudiced against them, all the Dominican men, he said, are in agreement that Venezuelan girls are a cut above the local Dominican ladies in every way. Smarter, more astute, more education, prettier, sexier, etc. Whether that's true or not, Johnny, I don't know. I don't live here. I'm just on vacation. But this cop was intent on calling her out on her papers. But she was having none of it and blew her stack and was yelling at him. She was the textbook example of the fiery Latina. It was a sight to behold, man, this beautiful Latina reaming out this cop. With all the gapers standing around watching, some of them started to applaud. And of course, a half dozen people were filming it, so I guess it's up on Spanish YouTube somewhere. It was one of those times I really wish I had my Spanish down. So then, the cop told the Uber driver and the Latina to stay right there. He had to get back to his work, but he'd called the ambulance and backup, and they were coming. In Latin America, I understand that could mean in 2 minutes or 2 hours. Meanwhile, the wife and I had been in a plane for hours. We were tired and wanted to get to that hotel. So I got out the car and helped the Uber driver pick up the lady's bumper and we put it in the back seat of her car. The Latina got back in her car. We got back into the Uber. We pulled around the corner out of the traffic, waiting for what? We didn't really know. After a couple of minutes, the Uber driver said, "Hell, I don't want to wait for what? No one's going to pay for my damages. Let's go." He had some scratches and a noticeable dent, but his car had about 20 other equivalent dings, so what did it matter? And the cop, he went back to directing traffic in the middle of the intersection. My Uber driver got out of the car to tell the Latina he was leaving, it wasn't worth it, but he'd be a witness if she needed one. I could tell. All he really wanted to do was get her phone number. That's a shocker, huh? Especially since he had a sweet picture of his wife and kids on the dashboard. But before he could even get to her car to say anything, you'll never guess what happened next. The motorcyclist, who was sitting on the curb looking so hurt, got up, brushed himself off, looked around in a kind of sneaky manner, and started walking away fast. And that thoroughly pissed off Latina in that Toyota saw he was taken off. She stepped on the gas, and by the time the guy was half a block down the street, she rammed him, and down he went. She caught him from behind, so he never saw it coming. So now he absolutely, definitely needed to go to the hospital. All right, me Johnny here. Pardon me if I'm laughing at some idiot's misfortune, but I gotta hand it to that Latina. She knows the culture. She's part of it and what you can and can't get away with. Now, you might think I'm a jerk, an ass, a heartless, inhumane cad. But when I first read this email, I secretly applauded that girl for getting her revenge. Oh, and by the way, our emailer goes on to say his Uber driver told him it was the coolest thing he'd ever seen. However, that was lost in translation. Because the Uber driver's English was kind of bad, the emailer thought he said that was the coldest thing he'd ever seen. But what he'd really said was that was the coolest thing he'd ever seen. He said, "I'm with her. I hate motos." Then the Uber driver said, "I want to marry that girl." Though I doubt she'd give him the time of day, Chester writes. She was way out of his league. Then Chester says, so in the end, Johnny, I guess after all that, her documents probably were fake. But who knows? Though this I know for sure. Having been forced after that accident to remain at the scene for probably 20 minutes to a half an hour, the oddest thing occurred to me. If you were paying attention to the traffic, you would have noticed the traffic flow was actually better and faster when the cop wasn't directing it. Even with that gaper's block, it was moving right along. My conclusion, Johnny, was the traffic cop made traffic worse, not better. What do you think? Keep up the good work, Johnny. Signed, Chester C. from Philadelphia. P.S. Put me on the waiting list for your next seminar. All right, Chester, thanks for that. I got you on the list. And you know, coincidentally, you're absolutely right. I've heard that same refrain from gringos and expats for years now. Exactly what you've noticed, that the traffic cops are less than useless. They make things worse. In fact, you could actually predict even blocks before you ever get to an intersection, whether there's going to be a traffic cop there or not, simply because traffic's at a crawl and it's taken so damn long to get there. It's a sore spot for me and almost every expat I know. Believe me, there's nothing you can do about it. Don't get me started. All right, enough said about that. Should we get really un-PC now? How about this one? Got a call from an expat buddy of mine who's been living down here, I think now 20 years, married to a nice, educated Latina. She's a lawyer. Though when he first met her, she wasn't a lawyer yet. She was still going to school. So anyway, they got married, had a kid. They actually planned it. That's always nice. Oh, did I tell you where they're living? Costa Rica. She's Costa Rican. They met there 20 years ago when he first came down and started a whitewater rafting company. In fact, that's where he met her. She was on a rafting and zipline trip with her helicopter school friends. So my gringo buddy has made some success in Costa Rica. And over the years, he's expanded. He's got a zipline ecological park thing, a fishing charter business, and a couple other things. Though not all of them were successes, he did all right. Oh, and he, like me, is one of those guys, when he first came down to Costa Rica, he had a great time, he loved it, but now he can't stand the place, but he can't leave either because he's got all those businesses and his wife's family there. Because, you know, when you marry a Latina, you marry her family. And they don't separate from their families easily. Unless, of course, there's that promise from a gringo boyfriend or husband that he's going to take you back to the States. That supersedes all, it seems. But I'm telling you right now, in the long run, that almost never works out. In fact, I don't know of a single case amongst my expat friends and acquaintances where they've come down to Latin America, hooked up with the Latina of their dreams, their soulmate, brought them back to the States, and it's lasted more than a couple of years. There seems to be 101 reasons why, in the end, that almost never works. All of us down here in Latin America have heard that story before. We've been put on notice. But we're also thinking, as humans do, hope springs eternal, right? We know there are always exceptions to that rule, and we think we're going to be that exception. Well, that's probably true somewhere, somehow, but I haven't seen it yet. So anyway, my buddy in Costa Rica married a nice upscale Latina, what you might call a child of the rich. She went to helicopter schools and all that, perfectly bilingual, which to me is a high maintenance warning sign. Man, don't I sound like a cad? Anyway, when a girl goes to an expensive helicopter school and she speaks perfect English, it's a situation I try to warn gringos and expats to try to stay away from. Simply because down here in Latin America, if you can hook up with one of the one percenters, they were born with a silver spoon. They're princes and princesses. They've had everything. And if you marry one, you're going to be the guy who has to carry on with that tradition. In other words, we're talking the very definition of high maintenance. That's not to say they're not nice people. In fact, this girl is a really nice person. Good-hearted, friendly, nothing fake about her. Her designer clothes and bling are certainly not fake. Like I said, high maintenance. Nothing wrong with that if you know what you're in for and can afford it. That in no way means they're bad people. It's just that all their friends are one percenters too, and they've been living all their lives in a sort of a hermetic bubble. Though one advantage to marrying or being with an upscale Latina is she'll never want to move to the States. She'll want to visit there and shop, but she'll never want to move there. Why? Because she's a princess in her own country. She's a one percenter with a sterling family name. And believe me, in whatever Latin American country you happen to be in, the sweaty masses, the other 99%ers, are well aware of the 20 or so power broker family names in that country. However, even if you were born with that golden name, once you relocate to the States, that illustrious family name and all the land, plantations, and other crap your family owns means zilch. Nobody gives a rip. But in their own country, those names, they not only open doors. Like Expat Eddie says, they allow you a free pass to double park anywhere. He said when he was in the restaurant business, it would happen all the time. Suddenly, a big black bulletproof SUV, a Tahoe or Suburban, would pull up right to the entrance of his restaurant, drop off people, and just stay there. And if the cops rolled by trying to ticket the car for double parking, Once they realized it was one of those magic family names, they'd move on. And if you don't think that happens, you longtime listeners may remember me telling the story of the drummer in one of my bands. His dad owned both the Pepsi and Brava beer franchise for most of Central America. If you rode with him and his bodyguard chauffeur, he pretty much owned the road and had a get-out-of-jail-free card. But I digress, as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah, talking about my gringo buddy, married to a very nice but wealthy Costa Rican girl, whose kid just turned 15. Now, I hadn't heard from this guy in a long time, and when he called me, I was kind of surprised, but he wanted to tell me a little story. The story of a dilemma he's having with his 15-year-old son, who obviously goes to an expensive helicopter school. Anyway, most of your listeners know about the tradition when a girl in Latin America turns 15. It's called the Quince Años party. They all have one. It's like a coming out party. It's the big event for a young Latina. Doesn't matter, rich, poor, middle class, all families pull out the stops in whatever manner they're able to throw their daughters a Quince Años party. And some of them, especially with the one percenters, are as extravagant as big time weddings. As for me personally, I've been invited to many of them. Even poor families can throw quite a bash and be in the hole for it to the neighborhood loan shark for months, even years. Now, I suppose most first world people, North Americans, have heard of these Quince Años parties for young ladies. I understand up in the States, Americans of Latino extraction practice that custom too. So then you ask, what about boys? What happens when Latino boys hit 15 years old? Are they left out of the festivities? Is it just a one-sided Latina thing? Well, here's something people don't like to talk about in public, but yes, most 15-year-old Latino boys have their fiesta too. And I know you're going to find this hard to believe, and I did too when I first got down here until I started hearing all the first-person eyewitness accounts. Turns out, in the majority of cases when a boy turns 15, now that he's considered a man, it seems to be a rite of passage, a rite of macho passage, for his father, uncles, brothers, or all the older males in the family to take the kid to a nightclub, a club de nocturno. Now, as some, if not most of you know, a nightclub here in Latin America, even though they're called nightclubs, are not places for guys and gals to go discoing. They are strip clubs with pole dancers and 100% anything goes as long as you got the dough. Because as you probably know, prostitution's legal in almost every Latin country. Full disclosure, I've been invited to a few of those make a boy a man parties. And I've always made my excuses and got out of it. It just seems too weird. Man, I'll tell you, when I turned 15, if my dad would have offered that kind of birthday present to me, he'd have been on the Divorce City Express. American mothers would never stand for that. But down here in Latin America, I'm sure mothers know, but they just prefer to remain in denial. Again, I'm not saying it happens to most all 15-year-old boys down here, but I'm sure I wouldn't be wrong by guessing it happens more than half the time. Rich, poor, middle-class boys, it doesn't matter. When kids hit 15, the macho dad thing kicks in, and suddenly they recall how their own dad or uncle or brother took them to the nightclub to complete the ritual. Again, let me make one thing clear. It's not just a lower middle class phenomena. In fact, throughout Latin America, in every large, medium, and small town, they've got low, middle, and upper class nightclubs too. Now, why do you think that is? It should tell you something. And always remember this. While in Latin America, nightclubs are exclusively for men. Good girls never go in, except maybe by mistake. Though oddly enough, one gringo friend of mine who'd been going with a beautiful Latina for a couple of years, she asked him to take her to a nightclub because she wanted to see what they were like. She was just curious. Well, he took her to a well-known upscale nightclub area of town, and they popped into three different clubs and had a drink at each one. They only stayed in each place for one drink, but his girl ended up being disappointed. Turns out she was expecting it to be like the strip clubs she'd seen in Hollywood movies. You know, with a pole dance girl doing her thing and all the guys hooting and hollering and shoving dollar bills in her garter strap. Well, in the nightclubs down here, a guy walks in, sits at the bar, and all of a sudden, about 10 girls in lingerie line up in front of the guy, each trying her sexiest pose on him, waiting for him to make a decision. Well, needless to say, when my buddy's girlfriend saw that, she was slightly unnerved by it, because the girls were shooting sexy poses at her, too. Thinking maybe they were a couple of gender-fluid swingers. She didn't like that feeling much. Hey, like my buddy said, she wanted to go. She asked for it. Oh, and by the way, my gringo buddy said that all went down about a year ago, right in the midst of the COVIDiot panic. And believe it or not, at 8 or 9 o'clock at night, when they were doing those experimental nightclub rounds, they were pretty much the only, quote, potential clients in any of those places. But let's backtrack for a second to my gringo buddy who's been living in Costa Rica for 20 years with his Latina wife and 15-year-old kid. Turns out, and this may be the point of the story, My gringo buddy mentioned he had a discussion with his kid about that nightclub thing for 15-year-olds, and he told his dad, my gringo buddy, that nearly all of his own 15-year-old buddies at the helicopter school had been or will be going through that ritual shortly. And that was one of the reasons he called me to ask my opinion on it. Now, not having any kids myself, much less a 15-year-old kid going through that dilemma, all I could say was, man, good luck with that. But that wasn't the end. There's more to the story. Then my buddy said to me, Johnny, you don't understand. When I got married to my beautiful, upscale Latina wife some 20 years ago, he said, after I proposed to her and all the plans were being made for the wedding, one night at dinner, she got very serious. She said, we have to talk about something. Get it out in the open. She said, I know men have their urges. She said, if you go to a massage parlor or a nightclub, I could accept that. I don't want to know about it, but I know men have their urges. But never, 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 please fall in love with anyone else. That would kill me. That would break my heart. Now, my buddy, 100% native-born gringo, he was just not prepared for that conversation. It took him completely by surprise. Anyway, he stumbled with the words, but agreed, of course. So then what did I say to that? What was my advice? Well, I told him it wasn't much of a shock to me. I'd heard that tune before. Turns out around 10 years ago already, man, does time fly. I was having a nice long talk with another good buddy gringo friend of mine who'd been living in various Latin countries at least 15 years. A transplanted New York garment guy, owned a couple of maquilas, you know, sweatshops. Well, he'd been through a bad and messy divorce in the States, came down to Latin America, trying to forget about it, escape his troubles and all that. Well, after a while, he too met the Latina of his dreams. She was also one of those upscale helicopter school Latinas, the kind I'm always warning gringos and expats not to get involved with. Though it is easier than you think. You've got that gringo advantage going for you. Besides, these ladies, the ones that go to helicopter schools, they all speak very good English. And as you probably know, I'd say 95% of the gringos and expats who come down don't know a lick of Spanish, and so they gravitate towards other gringos and Latinos and Latinas who speak English. Why not? Anyway, he married the Latina of his dreams, who was also high maintenance, but she had a really good job, you know, family connections and all that. So in his case, and luckily for his pocketbook, she did not turn out to be high maintenance, except he had to put up with some of her stuck-up, overbearing family members. Not all of them were like that, but quite a few need to be taken down a peg, he said. In other words, there were a few of them he just couldn't stand. Anyway, he told me pretty much the same story. Before he and his wife got married, she told him right out. She knew guys had their urges. She said her dad, brothers, and uncles had their affairs and mistresses. So she said it wouldn't be a deal breaker if he, my gringo buddy, acted on those urges as long as he was discreet and never fell in love with any one of them. So think of it. I just told you stories of two gringos married to upscale Latinas who bought into their guys can cheat scenario as long as they keep it quiet and don't fall in love. So if that's accepted or tolerated in upper class Latin society, you can imagine with the middle and lower classes, you can bet couples don't even bother to have that discussion at all. As unfair as it sounds, it's part of the culture. Again, I'd like you to imagine a scenario where an American wife or wife-to-be would have that conversation with you. Yeah, I know. There are open marriages and swingers. But that's when both couples agree to go play the field. In this case, the Latin American case, it's the Latina reluctantly giving her guy permission to do things outside the relationship that she's not interested in doing at all. I know. It's all pretty strange and complicated, but these are things some people want to know. This show is not called The Expat Files Living in Latin America for nothing. I know that over the years, sometimes in every show, we talk about things no one ever discusses, you'll never read about, or hear on YouTubes or podcasts either. For example, if you remember on the last show, I read an email from a guy named Eric, who came down to Guatemala and got a couple of weeks' boots on the ground. He said, what practically everyone says once they arrive and get quality boots on the ground. He said something like, Americans who've never been down have a completely twisted impression of Latin America. Those bloggers, YouTubers, Twitter and Facebook fools, you can read and listen to those guys till the cows come home. Come home to what? But until you get some really good quality boots on the ground, you'll forever have a misleading and inaccurate view of what's really happening here in Latin America. Now, as far as the next Expat Insider seminar that I've put off for a year and a half now due to COVIDiot pressures, looks like in the new year it's finally going to happen. We'll be putting together a new plan in the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned. And by we, I mean all of us who are involved in putting the seminar together. So hang tight, give me a couple of weeks, and we'll have all the details. And as always, at least with this COVIDiot crap, the main question has always been, suppose you land here in Latin America and everything's fine. You do the seminar. It's time to go home, and the U.S. and the airlines
Request that mandatory negative COVID exam 72 hours before you leave. What happens if you test positive? That means you can't leave, right? You gotta stick around, maybe for a week or two, until you test negative. That would disrupt things and be a real drag, wouldn't it? Thing is, though, I've been looking at the stats, and testing positive while traveling overseas seems to be a rarity. And it's going to be even less frequent now that the CDC has said the PCR test, you know, the up your nose with a stick, is no longer considered a valid test to show if you're infected or not. Did you know that? Listen to this. I'm reading this right from the CDC website. It says, National Laboratory Alert. After December 31st, 2021, that's coming up in 2 months, the CDC, Center for Disease Control, will withdraw the request to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, to use the PCR diagnostic panel and assay test first introduced in February 2020 for detection of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Then it says the CDC is providing this advanced notice for all clinical laboratories so that they have adequate time to select and implement one of the many other SARS-CoV-2 test alternatives. What do you think the up-your-nose stick test that's been used for a year and a half now, almost exclusively, will, as of December 31st, 2021, just 2 months away from when the show goes out, has been quietly and unceremoniously shit-canned, for lack of a better phrase, and will no longer be a valid testing protocol? Well, because not only is it very technique-sensitive, it's been shown to have an absolutely f***ing outrageous amount of false positives. In other words, it's been a multi-billion dollar scam and a very sick joke on the public from the start. Just more proof that your government can't do anything right and that you shouldn't trust a single f***ing word they say about anything. So where can I buy that Jail Dr. Falsey t-shirt? Hell, I'd even settle for the bumper sticker. Have you noticed he really loves the limelight? He's addicted to Hollywood-style fame. Who knows? Maybe Alec Baldwin will play cowboys and Indians with him. But I digress. Man, did I digress. So anyway, if they're phasing out the PCR test because they know it sucks, well, at least we've got the rapid antigen test, and the results come in under an hour. That makes traveling a little easier anyway. Not so much planning ahead like with that moronic PCR test where you'd get your results sometimes 2 days later. Not only that, the rapid antigen test actually shows if at that moment you're shedding virus particles. And people with active COVID do shed a certain amount of virus. So anyway, the bottom line for us is dropping that idiotic PCR test is good news for the upcoming Expat Insider Seminar. Finally, we can pick some dates.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.